Good morning, sir. Before we get, can you hear me okay, sir?
Yes.
Okay, before we get started, what is your name, sir?
Carl Edwards McGee.
If you would just hold on for one moment, sir, I believe that the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis will be conducting your hearing, so he'll be right with you in just a moment.
Okay.
Kiwanis, we have the prosecutor. I don't have a sign yet.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes.
Can you state your full name and ADC number for the record?
This is Carl Edwards McGee. ADC number 022226.
Thank you, sir. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31412A hearing to consider regular parole and or absolute discharge to hold arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. If you can see on the video conference screen, I'll begin with the opposite side of the bench working toward me. We have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. Then we have the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. At the center of the bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. Next to me is the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for your hearing. I would like to begin this hearing with the following summary. Mr. Carl McGee is 59 years old. On December 16, 2011, Mr. McGee was sentenced to 20 years imprisonment for murder in the second degree. He has a provisional release date of August 1st, 2020, and a sentence end date of January 28th, 2021. And Mr. McGee, I'll ask you right now, because our parole packet was not complete, were you convicted by jury trial, or did you plead guilty, sir?
I plead guilty.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. This crime actually occurred on or about August 20th, 1980, but Mr. McGee was charged and convicted much later due to DNA evidence discovered while he was already incarcerated for a 2004 burglary and theft conviction. He was approximately 20 years old at the time of the incident offense. Technically, he will be eligible for parole effective April 15, 2019. He has an extensive criminal history with many arrests, including sexual assault, and Arizona convictions for theft, aggravated robbery, theft by means of transportation, burglary, and theft. It should be noted that he was on probation at the time of the 1980 murder, and he is also a previous TIS absconder and violator. I will now read a short summary of the offense in question with some follow-up from the discussion section of the pre-sentence investigation. And I say that, I usually don't read it, but this is kind of a reading criminal history. On August 22nd, 1980, 79-year-old Ruth Green was found deceased in her bedroom by the Housing Authority in the Dupleview Projects. Ms. Green sustained an incised wound on the corner of her eye, fingernail marks on her neck area and chin, a bruise on her jawbone area, a contusion on her shoulder, and a hematoma on the back of her head. It was determined Ms. Green died by means of strangulation. Fingernail clippings, blood samples, vaginal and oral swabs were taken. No suspects were located at the time. On March 24, 2005, Phoenix Police Detective Stu was notified that a DNA sample taken from Mr. McGee while he was in prison was a match to DNA samples taken from Ms. Green. On October 11, 2005, Detective Stu questioned Mr. McGee while he was in prison on an unrelated matter. He stated that he did not kill anyone and then he requested a lawyer. discussion and evaluation section of the pre-sentence report, there's a note that the present offense, or this offense, represented Mr. McGee's 10th felony conviction. He was first placed on probation in 1979, but later violated that grant and was sentenced to prison in conjunction with another felony conviction approximately 3 months after the death of Ms. Green. He continued his illegal behaviors, mostly for theft-related offenses. He was placed on probation and sentenced to prison for the remaining 7 felony convictions. Also, during this time, he incurred 22 misdemeanor convictions. For most of Mr. McGee's adult life, he's been incarcerated, and most recently, he remained incarcerated since back to 2002. In this case, Mr. McGee's DNA was matched to evidence found in an investigation into the murder of an elderly woman. According to Ames, Mr. McGee has received limited programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections. His inmate progress report, he claims that he has been rehabilitated, but he did not provide a detailed release plan. He has a moderate history of discipline in the Department of Corrections from 1982 through 2018, with his last ticket a minor on October 10th, 2018 for disrupting count. This is his second hearing before the board. His first hearing is special on September 9th, 1999. At least to the best of my research of the information that was provided to me, I did not find any letters of support. I did not have a letter opposing parole from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, but we do have a representative from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office in the room today. And thank you for being here, Ms. Valenzuela. Okay, Mr. McGee, this is your first time appearing before this board, and this is a chance for us to get to know you. Can you tell us, in your own words, about the crime that resulted in your incarceration and why you should be considered for supervised release? Thank you, Mr. McGee.
Okay, first of all, the next victim is my son's mother, Amy. Okay, and I went there one time. I had sex with her one time. There. And I never met the victim. And when I know her, you know that I never met her. And there was not only my semen, but there was 2 other semen there. And the other 2 that was there, there was the time that I got arrested or convicted of this year, they was dead. So they come after me like my lawyer told me. This is from what the lawyer told me. So my semen was not in her or nothing. I'm not being excused, but it was on her dress that was on the left side of her shoulder, on the back side. Not nowhere in her or on her body, but on the left side of her shoulder. So we suspected that when I had sex with her, that some kind of way that I must have wiped off on her dress or whatever, so she had to be dead. She had to die in that dress. But then, like I said, not making no excuse or nothing, but the lawyer just told me, well, who do you think they're going to come after if the other 2 victims is dead? Because then they try to say it was them, not only me, but then I said, okay, well, what are we going to do? They said, well, they will found 1 semen on the couch, the other semen in the bathroom, and your semen was found on the back of her dress. It's just that she died in. On her left shoulder, on the back side of her, and that's what the detective showed me the picture with her laying on her back. But I didn't know who the lady was. I never met her. So I went through all this here someday. I even filed for clemency because at the time I was up on the screen bands and stuff today going through the county. I couldn't go through a child inviting me this and that there stuff, something. So it was just a mess. So I just got tired of it, not too long ago, to 2014, as I was Tennessee, Clemson told me that I would be too close to home to be seen. So I just wanted to share my side of the story as well, you know, let them know what I could say on a child or. So that's why I want to see the tendency on that there. But then, all this other that's in my past, I don't grow up, I don't move on, and that was younger years or something. Now I'm much older, I see life differently, and I come to love myself, which my mother had told me, you know, don't tell me you love me, son, and because you don't love me, because first I learned how to love yourself. And over the course of the years I've been in here, all the rest of the 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, I was doing on citizen or whatever or something. But this little time here, it gave me time to really sit down and think about my life. And think about my life and what I want my life to be and how I need to adjust to a civilization and such things, you know? I'm still about this predicament and these ways that I should have to be going through. You know, but really I'm not hurting myself. I'm hurting my loved ones out there that I say I love. You know, my family, my friends, my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandfather and I haven't met none of them. And, you know, but I see life different now, and I know I can do better. I know I can do better. I have to do better.
Okay, Mr. McGee.
The chickens that I got up in here.
Mr. McGee.
Small chickens.
Yes. I will get into some of those questions, and we certainly want to hear from you.
Yes.
This is your hearing, but I'd like to begin with a few questions, and I'd like to remind the individuals that appear before this board that this is not a trial. We're not here to retry the case.
Okay.
But I didn't completely understand something that you said. You said you did not know the victim, but you had sex with the victim, or what did you mean?
I had sex with the victim's niece.
Okay.
I got two sons by her. She asked me to meet her over there. And she came and showed me that we had a place where we walked over there. And when I got there, her sister was on the couch having sex with another guy. But she was seeing another guy as well, and that's how his city came up to be on the couch, and the other guy she was seeing, I guess she had sex with
okay.
him.
Okay.
They found his semen in there. So what they are dead at the time that I get caught up in all this shit as well. So they said, who do you think they got to come after? You know what they are? It's living. So they
gotta
come after you.
Well, sir, you're talking about the only one who's left is living. Who's dead now, aside from the victim?
The other two guys.
What two guys, sir?
The
semen that was
found in the report.
What two guys?
Okay. At the time of the... this is what I was told by my lawyer. At the time of the time that they had found her dead, they found 3 bits of semen. Not just mine, but they found 2 other bits of semen by 2 other different guys. But as time went on and went on and went on, the 2 guys had died.
I think I'm going to have to ask the prosecutor later for some clarification on that, but thank you for providing that information.
Yes.
It looks like that you have not received very much programming for the long period of time that you've been inside the Department of Corrections, so why haven't you received very much programming?
The reason why I haven't received any programming is because I was in a program that was heavy up on some heavy medication. And then by the time program was really going on, they had took me off the meditation because we were saying it was too strong. But I had got exempt at that time because I could function in the past because they were talking about sexual, just stuff that didn't make any the other guys in there. And then I was going to a 101 class, but then they stopped that program.
As I stated at the beginning, there's a good remark in your inmate progress report about your rehabilitation and I think feelings about faith and how you've matured since you've been inside the Department of Corrections, but there wasn't much information about a release plan. So should this board see fit to grant some form of supervised release, what are your plans, sir?
Well, my plan was to help others try not to come through what I've come through. I got a lot of nephews and nieces, and I got kids coming up. I got other friends and stuff there. Just speak to them. Talk to them. To try not to encourage them to come this way, to think and do better and help themselves. Not only that, there, but help myself as well. I would like to get into some courses out there someday or kind of help others and stuff, you know, programs that's going around and stuff, and, you know, just try to do better, you know.
Have you applied for a halfway house, or is there a certain place you plan on living, sir?
Well, I got two or three places that I can go. I got family members.
And have any of those family members written support letters, or I'll stop right now. Do we have any family members that are in the hearing room today for Mr. McGee? Okay, so which family members and what is that plan, sir?
Oh, yeah, I got
my
sister Ann Johnson. I got my sister Lily Ruth Coleman. I got my sister Lynn Coleman. I got my sister Gail William. They were my visitors. And Mary Jo Pacey, I got two daughters by her. And she's a visitor as well.
Okay, sir. So is there any particular reason why they haven't written letters of support or why they are not attending the hearing today?
I don't know. Either work or either they wait to hear the decision. I really couldn't tell you.
Okay.
But they're supposed to be coming down, but they didn't come down yet, so... There might be a work to take care of the old family members and stuff. That's what we do, take care of family members and the kids. They got a lot of doctor kids and stuff they can get after.
Okay, Mr. McGee. I want to make sure I'm correct on this. You're stating that you did not commit this murder.
I'm saying that I had pleaded guilty to it. Because, okay, yes I did, because I pleaded guilty to it. Anything I pleaded guilty to, I consent to it, because if not, I would have just stayed there and just kept fighting and fighting like I did. It took me 6 years to come to this here, because they had me in a bind. They had me, okay, a death row. Only the death penalty is the only thing that was offered me. Death penalty. Well, the lawyers told me it should have carried 7 years. But they offered me life, death penalty. 6 and 5 and some years, judge said, we got to do something. Then we come up with death row, not parole guaranteed. So I turned that down. Then they come to 18 to 21. I was advised, Mr. McGee, you got a window now. You got a window now, Mr. McGee. You'll be able to get out. You got a window now. If you don't, they're going to tear it up and go back to the legal injection, Mr. McGee. So wait now.
So your version doesn't make a lot of sense to me, although I do recognize that there was an appeal that was related to the possibility of death penalty. But the bottom line is that you have a 20-year conviction for murder, too. So how did you arrive at that 20-year conviction?
Because it was between 18 to 21, and it was up to the judge to make the decision. And he chose 20.
Thank you, sir. You do not have a lot of discipline in VOC. I would call it moderate. But you did have a ticket on October 10, 2018 for disrupting count. What happened with that violation, sir?
Okay, it was not no disruption, no cow. I don't know how that thing came about. I started to bring a radio, but it was not no cow time. What it was the yard was open, building was open. You got two wings. I moved in another wing, talking to somebody in the second bed, officer in the bowl looking at me. Another officer from another wing come over and asked for my ID. Said I'm out of place. So when I went to district there, he said, yeah, well, they can give you a ticket anywhere because this is their place. They go in any building, they give you a ticket or they go tell you to get out of anything. Even though the officer that was in that building was there, he was present. His name is on my ticket. He was present right there looking at me. And this lady came in, which she's really much stricter than anybody and everybody. So she just pushed the issue. What it was, I found out later that the guy that I was with cussed her out so much and get so many tickets by her. So in order for her to get him, she had to get me too. And that's the honest God truth.
Okay,
and
sir.
I don't play with him. That's the way I see it, what I was told. That I should have been with him and nothing would have happened. But I did not disrupt no count. Disrupting count is when the yard is closed and either they do a count. The yard was open. It was open all through open. It was not closed. It was not doing no count time. So I don't know how disrupted count came about. I don't have no ticket disrupting no count.
Okay, sir. Let's talk a little bit about your past. It looks like that you had quite a few convictions and that you were already in the prison system when charges were brought against you for this murder. So what was going on in your life, in your youth, that led to so many prison convictions?
Just living a young life, just out in the world, just exploring, just out in the world doing things that didn't make really no sense in the world, that couldn't see, and just doing things. You know, just as a young teen or whatever, young adult, just doing things, you know? But like I just stated, as you get older, you either want to keep coming back or you want to stop assimilating. You take a person one time, either two times, either three times, either four times. It might take somebody all their life. But some people get it the first time, they get it the second time, they might get it the third time. But sooner or later, there comes a time in your life that you know, if you after something, you will see it. You know? If you after something, you will see it. It'll come to you. In due time, it'll come to you. But I just pray that I know that it ain't too late. I just pray that I know it ain't too late, that I ain't got to make this my burden at all.
Well, sir, I think it's fair to say, in general, it's not too late. You have a sentence end date of January 28, 2021, which is not that far away. So,
yes.
It's not too late. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Yes, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse.
Mr. McGee, I think Mr. Quinones asked you this. So did you strangle Mrs. Green?
I can't say I did.
And why not?
I did.
Why not?
The reason why I can't say I did is because at the time I was up under so much meds and this and that there, so I just can't say. Yeah, I cannot say. But like I said, if I sign that paper to get on past this in my life, okay, well, yes, okay, let's say on the record, yes and no and yes. Because, see, I can't say that there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Green.
So let me yes, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Green. anything else?
So I mean, yes.
Thank you, sir, Mr. McGee. Any further questions from fellow board members? I have no questions from fellow board members. Mr. McGee, I am going to check again in the hearing room to see if you have any supporters. Do we have any supporters for Mr. McGee that wish to speak on his behalf today? Okay, we have no one in the hearing room. We do have a representative from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, Ms. Kristen Valenzuela. Would you like to approach the podium?
Yes, Your Honor.
And if you can state your name for the record.
My name is Kristen Valenzuela. I prosecuted Mr. McGee after about the first 4 years. He had a different prosecutor, and then I inherited his case. It was a death penalty case. He had a DNA hit come back to him from Ms. Green's dress off of the left shoulder. There was a semen stain about the size of a silver dollar, maybe. And it came back to only his DNA, and it was in a deposited stain. The reason there were no swabs from the inside, although the original medical examiner, when they tested her, she had semen. They tested positive for semen back in 1980. All of the medical examiner items were lost. And so over time, when they went back to reinvestigate the cold case, they were able to find only the items of clothing, the sheet that her body was transported in, and her shoe that she had on when she was found. I apologize. But Mr. McGee did, in fact, have two children with her niece after he raped and murdered Ms. Green. There was no other semen or DNA. I don't know where he's coming up with these two other guys. Her two nieces did stay with her at the apartment, and I wouldn't doubt at all that they did have sex with men at the apartment. However, the day that she was found, they were not there. They, last time she had been seen, they were not there. Neighbors saw her go into her apartment. She was supposed to be over for morning coffee. She didn't show up. And when she was found, her wig was on the floor next to the couch in the living room, and appeared it had been a struggle all the way from the living room into her bedroom. The covers off of her bed were down onto the floor, and then she was found with her dress up around her waist area, and they took the blanket and they took everything else, but all of that was lost as well. The only evidence we had left was her dress. The defendant was asked by Detective Stevie, as the Honorable Mr. Quinones has indicated, he went down to the prison and asked her if he had sex with Ms. Green or any reason that his semen should be on her dress, and he said no, and then he asked for a lawyer. He stood in front of Judge Granville and told Judge Granville that because of drugs and alcohol, he couldn't remember doing it, but he didn't contest the fact that he did. It's not the same as Alford plea that Mr. Johnson has researched previously in a different case, which says, I don't believe I'm guilty, but the state can prove me guilty. This was not an Alford plea. This was a no contest because he said he was using so much drugs and alcohol, he couldn't remember doing it, but he didn't deny doing it. The reason that he was offered a plea was twofold. First of all, we did a year-long hearing on his intellectual disability. His attorney alleged that he had a low IQ. We were in front of the Honorable Judge Granville. We litigated that, and while he is not a high IQ in any way, shape, or form, he is not intellectually disabled, but he is on the lower end of the intelligence range. That was taken into consideration. And then in dependency of that hearing, our case agent died. So our case agent, who was at Ms. Green's autopsy with the medical examiner, who had already died, were both gone. And so we were going to have difficulty. We're still going to go forward, but we're going to have difficulty at trial. So because of the difficulty at trial issue, along with the intellectual disability issue, in spite of the fact that he had so many prior and after felony convictions to Ms. Green's murder, we did agree to give him an offer of the second degree murder, 18 to 21 years. And Judge Granville knew all of this information when he sentenced Mr. McGee, and he chose to give him the 20 years. And I believe that he had, I'm looking at the sentencing minute entry, and I probably don't understand the 1980 statute computation, but he was sentenced on January 27, 2012 to 20 years with credit for 2,234 days of pre-sentence incarceration credit. I calculated that, and that he should have an absolute end date in 2023, I think, but I'm hearing what the board is saying, so maybe I'm not understanding what that means.
I was going to say, frankly, I want to ask you for some clarification on that, about his calculation as to if this was a 20-year charge, was he given credit for other charges that were unrelated to this case, because he's not spending that much time in the Department of Corrections, based on my understanding of the information that's provided by the Department of Corrections. And of course, they don't make the decision either. They just calculate the time. But according to our release eligibility, the sentence began in December 15, 2005, with parole eligibility in 2019. I think I'm correct in stating that that's a provisional release, a PR, in the year 2020 with an SED of January 28, 2021. So it would seem that there was some time that was credited to him somehow.
I can speak to that real quick.
If you want to approach the podium and state your name, ma'am.
Since you're coming to me with the Department of Correction and Victim Services.
Yes, ma'am.
And I only want to speak in generalities, not to that specific case. But there's been a couple other inmates that I work with the years 80, 182, 3-year period where the inmate is eligible for parole but also gets to have that good time credits towards their case, and it's discretionary time with DOC, but by default they get that time. So it can still be taken into consideration on the back end, I guess, by Department of Corrections. I think this is one of them, because usually those with the PR dates are the ones I have found are fall into that category. So I can check, another time, or I can run and check if the board wants me to, if it comes. But I think that's why we're finding that, because he falls into that category that he's earning time, he gets good credits, and he is also eligible for probation.
Well, certainly we'll defer to Department of Corrections and time computation, but thank you for that clarification. Very much. Thank you, Ms. Moody. Back to you, Ms. Valenzuela.
Yeah, and that is why I was confused, and I guess I will contact Time Comp if they need me and try to get a better understanding of that. But yes, the 2005 start date is because he had 6 years of back credit from when the case started. So we had the 2,234 days. So I don't disagree with the 2005 credit, but when you add 20 on to 2005, it comes up with 2025. So that's where I'm confused, but I'll check with them and see if I can educate myself on that. But in the other thing I did want to mention, that of his prior felony convictions, two of them were sex-related. There was one where, when he was very young, he had a 14-year-old girl in the field that he was trying to assault, and a passerby stopped it, saw it happening, and stopped it. And so thank God that was not come to fruition. But this isn't the first time that he's behaved violently in this type of a manner. He got this plea agreement. He was already given benefit for all of the things that he's told you today, and we believe he should stay in the full amount possible to protect the community and for justice for Ms. Green.
Again, thank you for that clarification. I did see that he was arrested for sexual assault. I didn't see the conviction, although he's got quite a stack of convictions. But so he was convicted for that?
He was convicted of a separate charge. He was attempting to sexually assault her, but he did not complete it because the passerby stopped it from happening.
Okay.
So they convicted him of an assault and I don't remember the other charge, but it was not. He was not convicted of it. That was from the police reports. We were obtained all the police reports for the intellectual disability hearing, and so they're all exhibits at the Superior Court. We went through all of them to explain how, when he was questioned by police, he knew how to invoke his rights. He could, show ability to function, and adaptive functioning is one of the things that we do with the IQ and the intellectual disability evaluation. So,
is there anything else you would like to share with the board?
Just that Ms. Green suffered. She had multiple injuries. She had an incised wound that was a puncture wound, she was strangled, she was sexually assaulted, and she had hematomas on her head and on her body as well. This was something that had to be scary for her. She lived alone. She had nobody there to help her. And he knew she lived alone because he knew her nieces, and he took advantage of that fact. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you leave, I'll ask board members, there any questions for you? Yes, the Honorable Mr. Johnson.
This is just kind of for me a point of clarification. This is a cold case.
Yes.
Was it in 1980?
1980.
And he was convicted in 2005, 2006?
Well, he was convicted in 2012, but with his case started in 2005. Then we filed it in 2006. And so it was pending from 2005 to 2012 when he pled.
Okay, so was he in prison that entire time?
Yes. He was in prison on other charges. That's where they got the DNA hit off of him. Once they processed her dress, it came back to his DNA. He was in for a burglary charge.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Any further questions? Thank you for your time, Ms. Valenzuela. Okay, Mr. McGee, we're getting very close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us. You've shared quite a bit of information. But is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before this board goes into discussion and votes on this case? Thank you, Mr. McGee.
Yes, under some of my laws convicted of earlier sex crime, no, I was not. I was summoned to court because my name was used by the victim. And I was summoned to court, and the judge dismissed that. Even though I agreed to take a lie detector, that's what he agreed to dismiss that. So it never went into my record. The only way it went to my record because the lady with the little typewriter thing over there put it in there. Other than that there, I didn't have no time for nothing to do with none of that there. But just a mention of my name, because I was with the guy at the time that it's supposed to be alleged, but she was already there. It's a story behind it, you know. But then at the time, she ran out of his bedroom as I was coming into the house. So I don't know nothing about all this here, what I was supposed to have did with her and all that there stuff. But the judge dismissed that.
Okay, sir. I'm going to interrupt you in your final statement just for a second, because I just realized the follow-up question, and that was earlier you mentioned people that were dead, and so that they had to find somebody to charge. Were you talking about the investigators being dead, sir?
The investigator and the lawyer, this is what the lawyers had told me, that there was two others there, two other hidden semen. So either it was two investigators or two of his semen, but I'm taking each, that's what he meant.
Well, did someone say that these two other guys died since you've been in prison?
Yes. That's what my lawyer there told me.
Okay, I'm going to come out of your final statement for a second and ask a follow-up question to Ms. Valenzuela, which I probably should have asked when we had access to you. Thank you. Again, if you can state your name.
Kirsten Valenzuela.
Ms. Valenzuela, are there any other associated individuals? I know you stated that the timeline of when she passed away and that of who may have been in the residence, but were there other possible suspects that have died since this case?
Not through the police investigation. There weren't other possible suspects. Like, there was no one that Detective Stevie said, I believe this is someone that committed this crime and they've died. When the crime originally happened, neighbors said, we've seen this individual around, we've seen this individual around, there were other boyfriends of the nieces. And those were people that Mr. McGee's attorneys were attempting to point the finger at. And so there was a neighbor I had seen, and I don't remember his name, a boyfriend of one of the nieces, but it wasn't in the right time frame, and there was no semen that came back to him.
And to the best of your understanding, are they still alive?
I I honestly couldn't tell you the last, when we were in court last, I think they were, but I...
Oh, okay, all I'm saying is, there wasn't anything in the courts about two other possible suspects who are now dead.
There were no two, there were not two viable suspects who are now dead. Are there people that the defense attorneys for Mr. McGee were trying to point the finger at that could possibly be dead now, and I don't remember?
Okay.
That is a possibility.
Thank you, Ms. Bonesman. Okay, back to you, Mr. McGee. Do you have anything else that you would like to share with the board? And again, please don't repeat anything that you've already told us.
No.
Okay, thank you, sir. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, especially because you have not been before this board or before a board since 1999. But it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you'll just stay on the phone and remain silent, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir. The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, I do appreciate Mr. McGee sharing information with us. He's been cooperative, and I recognize this is the first time he's been before the board, or at least this board. But in short, we're confronted with a very heinous crime that he pled guilty to, a crime that happened in 1980. The case was not proven until much later. So again, he was sentenced in 2011. And in general, when I look at the whole of the case, I'm just not sensing real accountability from Mr. McGee, nor remorse. He states that he pled guilty, but then he says that he was on medication and cannot account for the event, while simultaneously still trying to suggest that there might be other suspects in this case. He does have a recent discipline inside the Department of Corrections. I stated in my summary that he is a previous TIS absconder and violator, and I don't think that he would adhere to the conditions of supervised release, and I'm not finding him a suitable candidate for regular parole or home arrest, but that's where I'll begin the discussion. Yes, I will begin with
Mr. Quant, just for the reasons you stated that he is a former violator, I agree with you. I think he would not do well on community supervision. Thank you, Mr. Quant.
Thank you, Matt. Any further input from my colleagues? Well, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion. Just give me a second. And that is regarding Mr. Carl McGee, ADC number 04226. And let me double check on that. Oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong about that. 042226, pardon me. My motion is to deny regular parole, absolute discharge or home arrest, and based on the year of the crime, I have no mechanism of asking for a one-year set-off, so I will simply state that I am making a motion to deny regular parole, absolute discharge or home arrest, and that is my motion.
Second.
Great. Seconded by the Honorable Mr. Neal, agreed upon by the Honorable Dr. Wright, the Honorable Mr. Johnson, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. Release type denied is 412A, 411HA. Again, that's regular parole, absolute discharge of arrest. The reasons for denial are as follows: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, aid to the victim, serious bodily injury, violation of previous probation, For our criminal history, repeat offender, for institutional behavior, I recognize that he's had moderate discipline, but he did receive a ticket very close to this hearing. Again, recent disciplinary infraction, lack of programming, poor no release plan, and no family or community support system. Is there anything else that my colleagues wish to add or correct? Okay, Mr. McGee, the board has voted unanimously to deny regular parole, absolute discharge of home arrest. You will be certified by the Arizona Department of Corrections to appear before this board again in approximately 6 months. We look forward to hearing from you again, and you're reminded that you do have a firm sentence end date of January 28, 2021. So we encourage you to take advantage of these last months to put together a plan for your return to the community, regardless of whether you're returned by this board or you reach your sentence end date. Thank you for being so pleasant with the board today. And Mr. McGee, we'd appreciate it if you give the phone to your CO3. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.